Good evening. Welcome to the Soleri Report. Today is Thursday, July 1st, 2010. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight, Money and Markets and Ask Catherine. Then the second quarter wrap-up. I like to do these at the end of each quarter. Take a look back, and I'll look forward to see where we're going. Also, let's go to the movies with Spartacus, the 1960 Stanley Kubrick movie about the slave uprising in ancient Rome. I also want to announce before we begin, we've made an addition to the Soleri Report. We've taken what used to be the complete collection, 17 audio seminars, including the four we continue to sell at the store, and we're making them available for all Soleri Report subscribers. If you go to your cart and go to into the archive and go back to what should be the very earliest part of the MP3 files, you'll find a link for the complete collection, and so something else to add to the Soleri Report subscribers. We also have the new podcast out. You can find it at the podcast page. Also, there's a link to it on the blog. And again, to remind, the transcript of the special Clifford Carnicom is up at the cart next to the MP3 for that report last month, which was so popular. Okay, our theme tonight is more slow burn. I said at the beginning of the year that I thought we would slow burn through this year. Many people have predicted a serious financial meltdown and crash. I changed, because of the increased risk coming from the sovereign bond problems, I changed my 80% chance of slow burning this year about a month ago to about a 70% chance, but we continue to slow burn, and it looks like it's going to be slow burn the whole way. I called it, in the year-end wrap-up, I called it the grinding of the gears, because what you're watching is as the cash flows shift from where there's been significant institutional capacity, we're watching institutions change in ways which are very painful. We're also watching the insiders. I've described the economy as being one of insiders and outsiders, and the insiders protect themselves and settle their differences by cutting out the outsiders, and clearly we continue to see that, particularly with G20 coming out of their meeting announcing all sorts of efforts to reduce deficit at the expense of the social safety net and labor and retirement benefits. But we're also seeing very significant competition between the insiders as well, and we can only guess at some of the issues. I'm going to be talking about it more as we go through tonight's report. But clearly I sometimes describe our world as a little bit like Disney World. There's the world upstairs with Minnie and Mickey Mouse, and then there's the whole operation downstairs that's sort of manipulating and managing the show on the upstairs. And it's sort of the difference between the covert and the overt. And we're seeing the covert show up a lot more, control what happens a lot more, and the game is getting more violent. We've seen it with a stock market drop of 1,000 points that happened coincidental with a decision by Congress to leave the most threatening parts of financial reform out of the bill, particularly audit the Fed. And now we see it with the financial reform bill suddenly dropping the bank tax as a result of Senator Byrd's death, which I have to say the timing on that was more than convenient. So we're really watching the political process grapple with the fact that in the economic model that we're operating, we're very dependent on violence, we're very dependent on warfare. The covert side of the house has an enormous burn rate. And to make sure that the monies keep flowing for the things they want, you're starting to see more and more pressure as the bubble ends. You know, in a bubble, there's cash flow for a lot of stuff. As the bubble drops, then there's a real competition for resources, and that's part of what we're watching. Money and markets. Let's quick look at what Rasmussen says is the mood of the country. 28% of the country now say we're headed in the right direction. That number keeps dropping. 52% still want repeal of the health care bill. It continues to be very unpopular. 60% still in favor of offshore drilling, despite the extraordinary impact of the oil spill in the Gulf, which continues to worsen. 45% strongly disapprove of Obama's performance. Total 55% disapprove. That means Obama spent the majority of his time in office with a majority disapproving of his performance. It's a hard job, and it is made harder by the fact that he promised much, which he had no hope of making good on. Some good news. It's amazing. It comes in the email this morning. Millions of vaccine doses to be burned. About a quarter of the swine flu vaccine produced for the U.S. public has expired, meaning the whopping 40 million doses worth about 260 million are being written off as trash. After homeschooling, the death of the swine flu vaccination and the effort to get a mandatory program ended was really an extraordinary example of literally how top-down control does not always work. And I have to credit many of the people inside the healthcare industry and many of the people who are leading the charge on overcoming autism, chronic fatigue, Lyme, and others who understand the dangers and deviousness of vaccines really contributed. I think it's probably a testimony to what a great job they did that we got the announcement that was in several updates ago of the Gates Foundation now funding the development of airborne vaccines, literally, so you can add vaccines to a global spraying program. You don't have to go through the doctors and nurses to administer them. There's an enormous success story here, and I really think it's an important one, and one that we're not going to hear about it's apparent quietly. The economy is clearly slowing down. Up on the blog today, a Pew survey announced that the recession has directly hit more than half of the nation's working adults, whether it's through unemployment, pay cuts, reduced hours, or shifting them to part-time jobs. That's an extraordinary number and shows that if you take John William at Shadow Stats, numbers of unemployed, the impact is far wider than just the unemployed. Many, many people are experiencing drops in incomes and a painful situation. I've described several times this week our economy to think of a body and the nature of the blood circulating through the body. We've literally taken 98% of the blood and shifted it onto one side of the body. So we see corporate cash flow levels at all-time highs. We see corporate profits doing well. In the meantime, what we see is labor literally being decimated, and the consumer, literally the American consumer, not able to spend. Now, we've talked about this many times. The reality is that when you have that much of the blood on one side of the body, the body's out of balance, and in fact, both sides get hurt. So we're really watching a negative situation in that sense. We've supported the stock market by cutting labor. That's a lot of where corporate profits have come. And the question is, can that game continue? If you look at the stock market performance, it's weakening. The Baltic Dry Index, which is really a measure of shipping, global shipping, has literally last month in June fallen off the cliff, and has dropped almost to 2008 levels. The global consumer does not appear yet to be in a position to replace the U.S. consumer, who's clearly tapped out. China's raising wages. Expect that to continue. The Gulf oil spill is a serious body blow to the body out of balance. So this is not the time, if you're going to take a body blow like that, this is not the time to, have 98% of the blood on one side of the body and the body able not to handle the blow. We have the demise probably of a $250 billion company, but in a way that is devastating to the much bigger economy, which is the value of the Gulf economy. It's a $2.2 trillion economy, and that's going to ripple through both the oil company, through the industry, impacted by efforts to slow down offshore drilling. It's going to trickle through the bond and derivative markets. It's unbelievable impact, and I don't think anybody really knows just how much it's going to be. In from a member of our network today, let me read it to you. Just heard from a friend in Pensacola. They said the place, including the National Seashore and the Bay, is ruined for the rest of our lifetime. My brother has a $5 million place there. He said he was screwed, too. He said the Bay is and will be toxic for the rest of our lives. The entire economy has been destroyed. Property values are now a fraction of what they will be before the spill. And who will want to locate their business there? The area has been destroyed by BP and incompetent administration. Lots of rich people on 1,000 miles of beachfront in the Gulf. That's a lot of expensive homes and property. So I think the reverberation of this is going to continue to, as, you know, for quite some time. As Jim Norman said in our Solari report on the spill, you know, we'll know if the first round of relief wells make a difference by August. As he said, 50% chance or less that they will. Goldman Sachs whack-a-mole continues. The anger over their windfall from the AIG continues with testimony this week in front of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission in Congress. Big New York Times article on AIG. It's up on the blog. A great article from Bloomberg, who continues to do really the best reporting, I think, of any of the major financial news services on what's going on. Great article on the inside baseball on Goldman Sachs' board and the problems with Goldman Sachs' board, really exposing some of the nuts and bolts of how companies do these things. The number two at Goldman testified, Gary Cohn, yesterday, and today their chief financial officer. I discussed Cohn's testimony on Flashpoints last night. You can get it up on their website or link to it from our events page where we try and link to the different radio shows as we do them. Basically, his main point was we don't act against the best interest of his clients. He was speaking more specifically about the specific situations. I took it on the Flashpoints discussion into a broader context in which, if you look at everything Goldman's done for the last 15 years, they've absolutely moved against the best interests of most of their clients. When you engage in this kind of reengineering of the economy, particularly moving extraordinary numbers of jobs and income abroad, and you don't bother to warn or tell a wide variety of your clients, including state and local pension funds, state and local governments, and you literally pump and dump, engaging in fraudulent inducement in the mortgage market, you bet you hurt a lot of your clients. So what he said was just bunk. And literally the chairman of the commission had trouble not laughing. It was very interesting to watch him try and keep from bursting into big smiles. We have then the chief financial officer today basically saying that they can't track their derivative positions or break it out from their other business. It's a bunch of bunk, but there it was. And again, we have the chairman of the commission will be up on the blog tomorrow saying, how can Goldman possibly not track their profits or their activity in the derivatives market? And I'm reminded when I was at Dillon Reed that the head of the capital markets used to have an accountant sit in his office and literally track the profits each day of every trader and each trading desk, and would literally have to report to him any time they were up by a significant amount in that day, and so that Dick could run out and say, so he used to run out and scream to them and say, tell me why I'm so lucky. And because he wanted to understand every day at every moment where the profits were coming from and what was driving them. So the notion that Goldman can't break out its derivative profits is completely absurd. Financial reform passes. Financial reform is a huge bill. It's highly complex, and I should say we had an agreement in the Senate. It hasn't passed yet. We're looking at a highly complex bill. The best quote on it came from the Wall Street Journal. It says Dodd-Frank, that's named after the leader in the House and the leader in the Senate who have really engineered it. Dodd-Frank doubles down on the same system that failed, which is basically saying what we're having is a tremendous amount more of something that didn't work last time, and it certainly isn't expected to work again. You have a real inability to achieve structural reform in any meaningful amount. If anything, you've got a lot more regulations and a lot more paperwork that's going to control more people that weren't controlled before. So, for example, federal control of municipal financial advisors, to me, unconstitutional, but there it is. Lots of harm to the community banks. Watch for rounds of consolidation. You're still going to be better off in a good local bank. However, be prepared to switch if yours gets merged or consolidated, because we're going to see a lot of this if it manages to pass. There was a tax on big banks. Byrd's death put the passage in jeopardy. The Democrats have re-engineered the tax out. The word is that Democrats think they can get the votes by mid-July. So there's very serious horse trading going on behind the scenes. If you look at the patterns, you know, it really makes you wonder the convenience of Byrd's death when it happened. You know, to me, looks very suspicious. Same with the 1,000-point drop. We're really getting the message from the whole process that the process of lawmaking is getting a little bit too violent to not be obvious. So it's a very uncomfortable situation, and I think that is not unconnected to what's been happening to the stock market, where we're clearly under 10,000 and there's real fear in the market. We could drop a lot. Okay, ask Catherine some more good questions. I addressed this one briefly. I wanted to address it again. I just listened to your Coast to Coast March 29 show. You stated you taught yourself to kick your sugar addiction. Can you tell us how or how someone who helped you and do a show on that subject? We have invited Dr. Robert Lustig. If you look at the blog, I've put up a video by him. He's one of the leading proponents of reducing sugar in the diet, quite extraordinary doctor. The way I did it was on the advice of one of the members of our network who used the system, who used, in fact, a different doctor than Lustig, but who recommended Dr. Lustig to me. And essentially, here's what he said, and I think I just caveat this with the fact that everybody's different. So this system was one that worked for him, and it worked for me. And so, you know, feel free to try it, but don't be depressed if it doesn't work for you, because I think everybody really is different. What he said was, you can have as much whole fruit as you want. You cannot have agave nectar, which I was using instead of honey. He said you can have a little bit of honey if you really want it, and you're free to have coffee in the morning. Coffee is one of those loves I have yet to give up. And for some reason and then no sugar whatsoever in your diet, and that has worked pretty well, and my desire for sugar has dropped enormously. When I have eaten sugar, I go to a dinner party, have some sugar, what I notice is my hunger increases dramatically. So not eating sugar has really helped me, and my energy is much more level. So yes, we'll absolutely do a show on that. If you look at the amount of sugar that Americans now consume on average, it's absolutely appalling. And based on my experience, you know, it's an addiction you definitely want to kick. Is the Gulf oil spill motivating your decision to move from Tennessee? For those of you who don't know about my decision to move from Tennessee, if you're interested, and I shouldn't say from Tennessee, to move from West Tennessee, because I'll move as soon as I sell my properties, and my expectation is I'll probably land in West Tennessee, much closer to Franklin Sanders and Hohenwald and all the things that are going on there. If you're not familiar with my decision to move, I encourage you to read a blog post I wrote called Planet Forward. As for years, if you just do a search for Planet Forward on the blog, you'll find it. It had nothing to do with the Gulf oil spill. We went through a period of discussing whether or not we're going to install cell towers in Hickory Valley in 2006. I informed my neighbors then if it happened, I would leave. The cell tower decision got revived in late March. I made my decision that if the permits were issued, that I would leave. So that decision was made in late March before the spill, which was 8 April. And then I was notified mid-May that the permits were a fait accompli, not just on one but two. And that's when I knew I was leaving for sure. That's when I put the first of my three properties on the market. So same time as the spill, but not connected. And I would say this, There is concern that the toxicity of the spill will integrate into the rainfall and impact the land here. Tennessee is pretty far north, but we do get the rain from the hurricanes. The reality is, if that happens, we're already dealing with real trouble from the chemtrails in the spring and genetically modified food. So if the toxicity from the oil spill happens, it's going to integrate with a lot of things which are creating toxicity anyway. So it'll be part of pylon, but the pylon's happening anyway. Part of the key to my decision was not just the presence of the cell towers, but the way that my family handled it, because it was my family who is putting in one of the cell towers closest to me. And, in fact, were able to obtain the permit before letting me know that they were doing it. So part of it is really based on the how it happened, not just that it's happening. So my business has evolved, and I really need to be traveling and much more outward-focused. There's a real need for me to get out on the road and not be in a place that's as remote. Being south of Nashville would be very helpful to me. And frankly, all this is doing is sort of deleting the advantages of being in a place as remote as I am. And given the benefits of being elsewhere, for me, it's best to shift my base to mid-Tennessee. Now, it's interesting. Several of my neighbors have commented to me that they believe the spill will cause people to move north, and this will support a higher real estate market here. I disagree with that. I think the net effect will be negative as a result of the overall impact on the economy and the morale, but we're going to see. There is a video I put up about 2 weeks ago on the blog that's very interesting if you haven't seen it. It's about destruction of crops over near Memphis and Tipton in Shelby County, and which people believe is coming from the rain. Now, it was probably too early to be connected to the Gulf. I suspect it was probably connected to chemtrails or something else, but it's kind of interesting to look at it, and it's a, you know, I hope it's not an example of things to come. Next question, who doesn't like you in NASA? I work for NASA, and they have blocked access to Celeri.com. Okay, so we called NASA, and they suggested we send a email to a gentleman named Michael Riddick, who works for Lockheed Martin at NASA. His email address is mriddick@nasa.gov. So my assistant producer wrote as follows. Your email was given to me by the NASA switchboard as the person to talk to about NASA's firewall. I'm an assistant producer for Celeri Inc., and we had a notice from a reader who apparently works for NASA that this reader was no longer able to access the Celeri.com website. I understand the necessity of firewalls and hope that NASA has a really good one, but it is a concern to us that NASA would be blocking legitimate Tennessee information site. I know that you have a lot to do, but could you check and see if your firewall is indeed denying access to Celeri.com? I don't want to make a bigger fool of myself than I naturally am and complain to our senators about a non-existent problem. Thanks so much and all best wishes. Mr. Riddick wrote back and said, I do not have any problem accessing your site. So I don't know whether that's because Lockheed Martin has no problem accessing it or NASA as well. He does write from NASA.gov. So as far as we know, there is no problem in accessing Celeri from NASA.com or NASA.gov. Okay, question regarding Celeri's investment performance. Someone wanted to know about how our investment performance is done. Celeri Inc. does not manage money, so we don't have an investment performance. In my other hat as the managing member of Celeri Investment Advisory Services, I do advise clients on their investment strategy. However, each client is different. We're not managing money. We're advising clients who have very different portfolios. The core position in our recommendations, whether at Celeri Investment Advisory Services or on the Celeri Report, for many, many years has been silver and gold. So it's one of the reasons we started Celeri Silver and Gold is because it's been a core position, and we anticipate that that recommendation is going to remain the same for quite some time to come. So if you want to look at the performance of Silver and Gold, that'll give you a sense of how our recommendations have gone. The best introduction to our overall investment philosophy is our audio seminar, Positioning Your Assets for Growth in uncertain times. There's some great ones on precious metals as well. There's one called Building Real Wealth, which is one of my favorite. They're all in the complete collection of audio seminars that's now available to you at the first date in the archive on your cart. So if you haven't listened to Position Your Assets for Growth in Uncertain Times and you're interested in sort of the performance of our investment strategy, I would encourage you to go listen to it. Okay, great questions on Ask Catherine. That's it. I want to remind you that we do have the capacity on our new software under the Instant Teleseminar software for you to ask questions live. So as we're going through the wrap-up, if you have questions, please feel free to post them through your browser for me to take a look at live. Okay, second quarter wrap-up. This was an amazing time. Most important event of the second quarter, it's at the top of my list on the blog post. The Gulf oil spill changes everything, and it really does. Charles Walters was the founders of Acres Magazine. They're the sponsors of a great conference once a year on sustainable agriculture. And he wrote a book called Unforgiven. And in it, he hypothesizes that the GNP of any country is a multiple of its farm income. And so if you squeeze out and destroy the farm base, particularly the small farmer base, he argues that you can literally destroy the economy. And in that vein, you've often heard on the Precious Metals Market Report, Franklin Sanders say that wealth comes from what men take from the earth. Now, I bring those two points up because for many years throughout the bubble, there's been a real divorce between the real economy on one hand and the financial system, including the government system of sort of governing and ensuring the financial system. And while we had that disconnect, we've literally watched the financial system and the government system drain the real economy. And what we're watching finally with the Gulf oil spill is the real economy biting back. And it's biting back because what you're watching in the Gulf is all the core activities or many of the core activities related to the Gulf economy. We're not trading on Wall Street. We're not flipping paper around. They're concrete activities of things that we take from the earth. So fishing and shrimping and drilling, and then tourism related to the beauty of the earth. And those are core economic activities, and then from them flow many, many multiples of GNP. You have all the different retail businesses. You have people buying cars. You have people financing homes with mortgages. You have a whole series of different activities that then ripple through the stock market, through small business, through the banking system, and part of the greater GNP in the country in ways that are very invisible and not clearly understood by, at this point, I would have to say, a majority of the population. Watching Gary Cohn's testimony yesterday, I would say it's still not even understood by Goldman Sachs. And now when you have an event which causes the fishing, the drilling, the shrimping, the tourism to stop, then all that financial and retail activity that leverages off of those cash flows and those activities then starts to slow and come to a halt. Now, the $64,000 question is, will the toxicity as it cycles through the ecosystem also have a major impact on the atmosphere and on the crops throughout the next to the coast and throughout the south? I don't know. It's almost impossible to tell from listening to the media. I will tell you, in the last week, I have been so frustrated with all of my colleagues in the knowledge business and the media business. And it's really been, I've thought a lot about how I could use the Solari report to provide an alternative, and I'll explain it why. When it comes to the Gulf oil spill, I watch the corporate media And what we get is monkey mind. There's no serious breakdown of what's happening, how it's happening, why it's happening in a way which is peaceful enough to simply just get the facts. When I turn to the progressive media, what I hear is an awful lot of whining, and again, something that appeals to emotion or expresses emotion much too quickly. There's no time to just get the facts. And finally, you turn to a lot of the alternative media, and what we've gotten is what I call Apocalypse Now. Someone called me earlier this week and started at 8:30 in the morning to start to tell me one of the most apocalyptic scenarios of coming out of the descriptions of the Gulf. And I just said to them, you know, I'm running a serious business. I just don't have time for Apocalypse Now this morning. If you listen to some of the real disinformation, it's pretty, pretty scary stuff. And the situation is serious enough without that kind of disinformation. So we're really watching a media effort that's not helpful, and it's very hard to get good, reliable information. It's very hard to get information without seeing emotions manipulated or just spewed out. It's one of the reasons I wanted you to hear from Jim Norman, who I think is very knowledgeable and is very sort of, his attention to detail and the nuts and bolts of what's going on is part of the base of what we need. Now, Jim and I still disagree. He thinks it's an accident. I think the chances of sabotage are much higher than he does. If sabotage is involved, I doubt that it was intended to be quite this bad. But there's no doubt about it. If you look at sort of the covert warfare that's going on and the frustration with the older generation of the Anglo-American Alliance compared to the sort of younger generation of the people responsible for the black budget, those kind of tensions could trigger something here. It's a serious problem. The message, because of so many people who've been harmed, is clearly you are expendable. For many, many years, the majority of people in America, particularly the kind of people who can afford wealthy homes along the Gulf Coast, really felt that systematic corruption was sort of the way things are. It wasn't something they could do anything about, and they would be okay despite it. And now what we're watching is a message to everyone that corruption is expensive, systematic corruption is expensive, and everyone is expendable in this kind of situation. And that no matter who you are and how powerful or how much money you have to care, because we are in a situation where a $250 billion company can destroy a $2.2 trillion economy. That's not proper risk management. Now, what's interesting is one of the bright spots to come out, and I hope it works, is Kevin Costner's efforts to produce and market a machine that will clean water and clean oil out of water at very high speed. He's invested $20 million. His brother's a scientist, engineer, has been working on this. It's an example of the importance of putting private equity behind real solutions. Clearly, Costner has been able to go into the marketplace and earn that money. But it's a perfect example of, instead of putting his money in BP stock, he put his money behind his family and in private equity behind real solutions. Let's hope it works, because it's great. Every time we can see an example of somebody doing that and having it be successful, it's a real positive message to the rest of us as to sort of the way through this kind of situation. Okay, G20 Bilderbergers, presidents and premiers. If you look at the leadership that's having to manage in this situation, it reminds me a little bit of Bill Cosby's routine many, many years ago about medics. He said, the life expectancy of a medic from the time he hits the water to the time he almost gets to the beach is 7 seconds. And literally we're seeing turnover in Japan and Australia. In the UK, we're literally watching leadership come up, promise what they can't deliver, and literally be composted in faster and faster order. We have reports coming back from the Bilderberger meetings that they're depressed. Some are afraid to come to the meeting. This has been interpreted to mean they're afraid of sort of the general population, and I think that's true, but I also think they're afraid of what it takes to manage in this world and the way things are going. What happens when you have a global economy that allocates money, when you drop the price of the cost of capital and rig the money to insiders, you get severe misallocation of capital. You have massive amounts, trillions literally, going into non-productive functions. And what it happens is it makes governance much harder because you basically finance decades of bad behavior, bad habits, and misallocation. And governance becomes much, much more difficult. And literally what we're watching now as the bubble diminishes, we're watching a whole globe literally train not to be productive. And, you know, some of them are very dangerous and have weapons. So we're seeing a lot of unhappiness, and it's very difficult to build alignment or get anything done in that environment. We saw G20 come out and basically say, we don't want to keep stimulus going. We want to cut our deficits. The clear message is we're perfectly happy to solve the problem by protecting institutions and cutting people. That what that means is what we've talked about for several years now in the Salieri report. That means cut labor, cut retirement benefits, cut social safety net. Now, in the United States, don't expect the president to stand up and say, okay, we're cutting health care, we're cutting Social Security. What they're going to do, and what we're starting to see in the news now, is they're going to add more and more constraints. They're going to slow down how they reimburse Medicare and Medicaid doctors, so more and more doctors are going to drop out of the system. They're going to put more and more rules on Medicare and Medicaid, so it makes it more and more painful to deal with the system, or you have to take drugs you don't want to take, or you have to be compliant with rules that you're not comfortable with. And what they're going to make is they're going to make it infinitely more painful and infinitely more expensive in terms of time or health to deal with the government programs. And so it's you're going to see all of these social safety nets die on the vine. Of course, the ultimate insult is going to be inflation. So as they continue to print money, and Social Security, for example, does not get cost of living increases, the value of that stipend is going to go down and down and down. It's not surprising we're seeing more people dependent on that income leaving the country and moving to low-cost areas, because the value of that in terms of what the purchasing power is going to continue to diminish. The politics of Eurasia get quick question. We have a question. Have you heard Richard Hoagland on the Gulf spill? Yes, I have heard Richard Hoagland on the Gulf spill, and I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical of the of how extreme the presentation is, and I'll leave it at that. I'm skeptical. So I'm not saying that it's not bad. I'm not saying that we couldn't see real problems with the pressure and the gas as Jim Norman has explained, but I think that a great deal of effort has been made to make this out to be much more frightening than it has to be. And the reality is that if you look at the intention behind why those scenarios are being presented, I don't think it's in the best interest of helping the situation be successfully resolved. So I'm very skeptical of Hoagland's presentation. Okay, China, Russia, and the politics of Eurasia. There have been, we've been watching a lot of backdoor deals between the U.S., China, and Russia, particularly to get on board with the Iran sanctions. A very interesting piece from Fidel Castro, it's up on the blog, describing the risks of nuclear war as we continue to move in on Iran, and I think it's worth thinking about, because if you look at the levels of tension and violence politically throughout the globe, there is a risk of nuclear war, and it's rising. And the situation in the Middle East is very sensitive. There's also a video of Ron Paul addressing the Iran sanctions. Why are we going to war in Iran? Why is Iran so important? If we're going to bring everyone into the central banking system, we cannot tolerate someone being out of the central banking system and having an independent energy. Not surprisingly, Iceland was a country that had instituted very low-cost geothermal. It's not surprising they got pumped and dumped. It's the same with Iran. What Iran is trying to do is to create a real independent energy capacity and remain outside of the central banking system. Now, if you're going to have a one-world currency and a one-world digital currency, you can't afford that kind of leakage. One way to explain what's been happening for the last 5 years in the financial system is you're literally watching the U.S. roam around the world and attack any form of financial leakage, anything that would keep their banks out of the market and keep their settlement systems from controlling. And so if you look at the part of the dynamic of why we're going after the Swiss accounts, it's not disconnected to why we're going after Iranian energy independence. We have recent changes in the U.S. command and questions about our policies in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Iran. It's all part of the politics of who controls Eurasia. To my surprise, we have the U.K. papers openly talking about the U.S. control of the Taliban and therefore the control of the opium trade. It was kind of shocking to see that, but it's much more sort of the man behind the curtain emerging as everybody's squabbling over things. There's a real challenge if you look at the issues related to the recent change of command. We have Rolling Stone coming out with an article basically dishing the general who just was replaced. Here's the reality. If we're going to drop our military into foreign countries to take control of their resources and to enforce empire within that place, there's no way you can send diplomats to do that. You've got to send people who are good at special forces. You're going to end up having firms like Blackwater, despite their name change. I'll still refer to them as Blackwater. I mean, the reality is you can't implement genocide by diplomatic mean without a military who can implement genocide. That's why we're there. That's what we're doing. That's how it works. Now, you can say, well, I'm not for that. I think it's terrible. The reality is if we hold dollars and invest in the U.S. Treasury securities, we're counting on the military to make sure those dollars hold their value. This is what they have to do. It's not pretty, but it's the reality of our financial model. It's the reality of, if you look at 90% of the portfolios of the middle class in this country, we're all expecting them to do that. So military and intelligence agencies can't manage that kind of double bind, and that's the double bind that's coming, that's emerging from behind the curtain, and it's something we're all going to have to face, not just when we look at global geopolitics, because it translates down into the same kind of corruption in every county in America. And so this gets back to the covert coming out from out of the closet, and it's whether globally or locally, it's something we're all going to be dealing with. Natural resource trade wars by every other name. The competition continues. We saw and have discussed the $1 trillion announcement in Afghanistan of precious metals, other metals and minerals. The Taiwan-China deal up on the blog is very important. There's big equity in Taiwan, and if that equity starts to flow into Taiwan and free trade back and forth, including that equity to help buy natural resources around the world, it's going to be a very big boon to what's happening in China and Asia. I would note that the PRC Constitution is very different than the U.S. Constitution. Their Constitution applies by people, not by place. Our Constitution relates to the people who live within the borders of the United States and are U.S. citizens. Their Constitution applies to any Chinese anywhere. So the equity ties, if they grow deep between Taiwan and China, can be significant, not just in Asia, but to the tribal networks that are moving around the world. It's a very tribal culture. It's going to be very interesting to watch. Financial reform and Goldman whack-a-mole. Again, the vote on financial reform, as I described during Money and Markets, was delayed till mid-July by Senator Byrd's death. The Goldman testimony, very, very interesting. I wanted to read that CFO quote today at the commission. The commission chairman said after the testimony, quote, "The commission has some real questions of credibility about whether an institution as sophisticated as Goldman can't tell whether it's making money or losing money on the derivatives business. They have a 1.2 million derivative contracts, and it just seems logical that they should be able to produce the management information to show us the scale of its business." So, a lot of frustration with Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, according to the latest survey, continues to be even more hated than BP, although certainly BP is coming up strongly. Technology continues to dazzle. We continue to see stories of real technological advancement. Article up at the blog this week on the collider in France, on the border of France and Switzerland. A new announcement about quantum computing. But a very interesting note from a subscriber. He says he was up in Boston. Let me find the paper. He's up in Boston, and he took something out of the mini bar, and the next morning never left the room. He got his bill in the underneath the door, which had charged him for what had been taken out of the mini bar, which meant if he moved the item out of the mini bar, technology was basically tracking his every move in the room. I sent it to Catherine Albrecht, who we had on in the this year to do spy chips, so that you could start to understand some of the how this technology was applied, and she informed me that in fact that will happen even if you just move the item, and gave me several examples of what she had noted in hotels she'd been in. So very chilling to see that we're even being tracked in our hotel rooms. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal about a fellow who complained about his room on Twitter and got a call from the hotel from the desk asking if he'd like to move to a new room. Apparently the corporations now have people who just track and watch Twitter and the social networks to see what people are saying about them. iPad and iPhones, we're watching huge bursts of people buying new technology from Apple. They've announced a deal for the iPhone with Verizon. A great quarterly on technology from The Economist. I posted some of the stories today. One of the lead stories, which is up on the blog, is the possibility that of wireless electricity, a la Tesla, the notion being that not only will you get your cell service through the wireless, but you're going to get your electricity too. Now, what you start to see, another story in the same quarterly talking about new missile technology, and the quote is, "Missiles are now the poor man's way of obtaining sea power." What we're starting to watch, and part of this is technology, is if you're going to control the planet with fossil fuel, you have to control the sea lanes. And I've said many times before that part of controlling and being the reserve currency on the planet is you need that control asset. So the dollar being the reserve currency is part of a model in which you control the sea lanes and you can control fossil fuel. And it's been my intuition for quite some time that one of the reasons we're trying to roll out a model to control the seed supply and fuel is because technology, whether it's energy technology and switching over to much lower cost energy technology, or the difficulty of controlling the sea lanes and the changes in weaponry, make it much more appropriate to control through, for example, the seed supply than through fossil fuel. But technology is a driver, and we're going to see more and more very dazzling technology coming out through the end of the year into next year. It's just going to keep coming. What one of the things that's doing, and we'll talk more about it in the second half of this year, is it's causing tremendous creative destruction in music, in media. It's causing more unemployment. In addition, we're watching a real reorganization of how entertainment and music works as a business, literally because artists can go direct. They can get on the internet. They can You know, they can do something on YouTube. It's really changing everything. And it's one of the reasons we're seeing more and more signals of the government wants to control the Internet, because literally the creative destruction is moving very quickly. Wanted to say something about Global Spring programs. We had a very successful series in the second quarter. I did an introduction on chemtrails. We then had two interviews with Clifford Carnicom. We're only going to have one. We got so many questions, so much appreciation, so many requests to go deeper. We came back, did a two-hour special. The transcript is linked to that two-hour special in your card if you want to read it. I strongly recommend you do so. It's critical to understanding Global Spring, and we don't begin to have the information that we need to really understand 100%, but we have some information. Critical to understanding Global Spring, it's critical to understand it, to understand who is control and why they're behaving the way they're behaving, and it is absolutely essential to understand the kinds of environmental pollution we're dealing with and need to protect our health. And so it's a very serious pocketbook issue, because if you look, just speaking as an investment advisor, it's absolutely essential that we all do whatever we can do to protect our health, because ultimately a healthy body is going to be the best thing we can do to create financial security over the next two decades. So this is a very serious pocketbook issue, and I would encourage you, despite the difficulty of the grief that comes with facing the weirdness of what is happening, there's real power in having worked through that, because it really, you know, the Buddha says, your problem is you think you have time. It really lights a fire under your you-know-what to get radical about protecting yourself from environmental pollution. Housing and real estate markets, there's no relief in sight, particularly given the downturn in the economy just in the last 30 to 60 days. Don't expect the housing markets to improve anytime soon. We have a lot of commercial real estate problems to work through. The monetary policy is holding some support to the nominal prices just by the Fed continuing to print and support the banks in this area. The reality is we built a housing and commercial real estate, housing and real estate stock that is appropriate for a different time. So part of the problem is not just we've got too much money in and we've got bubble money in. It's that we didn't do the kind of real estate that we need for the next two decades. And we don't have the incomes to support the current price level, so something's going to give. During the height of the bailout, we literally, in 2008, we had $10.7 trillion of mortgages in the United States. We could have, with $12-plus billion given to the banks, we could have literally paid off all the mortgages in the country. We gave the banks that amount plus $2 trillion more. There's great hoopla going on, the government congratulating itself for being paid back. Now, if you look at how those paybacks are being engineered, where the money went, how the banks have used it to generate profits, it's very much a staged event. You know, there was a $12 trillion bailout, and there's a great deal of money missing. Let me do a quick rundown of markets. Municipal markets, the state and local governments continue to adjust. There are far fewer defaults than many have expected to date. That's because there are rich reserves within the municipal, state, and local system. There's also a political willingness to cut services, to draw out payments, sell assets. The reality is that significant reengineering is possible. If you look at the state and local government system, federal state and local government system, it's never really been reengineered for what technology can do. So the overhead has shot up dramatically compared to private industry, where it's dropped. Now, of course, a lot of that is the government sort of supporting the employment or supporting the private corporations. So I don't mean to say that private corporations are efficient where government's not, but there's a great deal of reengineering that can happen. What we're watching, though, is that governments and corporations are going to protect their institutional capacity. It's the people who are getting composted. When it comes to the municipal bond market, you want to be very careful. We have several more cutback cycles to live through My recommendation is don't pay for insurance on bonds. Stick with underlying fundamentals. Be skeptical of ratings. You really want to know what you're buying, and you want to buy where there's leverage. I'll give you an example. One of the bond deals I structured when I was on Wall Street was Farebox revenue bonds for the Metropolitan Transportation Authority in New York. We put a lien. Literally, the money in New York goes from the tokens go from the collection. They get vacuum cleaned. It's quite interesting how it all works. They go into the Federal Reserve, and the money gets taken out for the bondholders before it goes to the operations. And literally, if Albany doesn't keep the subsidies coming, the subways and buses stop, which means Wall Street's workforce can't get to work. Now, that's real power. So you want to be in bonds where there's real leverage and where there's real fundamentals. And so you want to pick and choose, but generally you want to be pretty careful. And we run the risk in the whole fixed income market that inflation can kick up. So I tend to stick with short duration and strong fundamentals. The equity markets, there's no doubt about it, nerves are fraying. The ETFs are drawing in great money. It's the new fiat. We need real equity markets if we're going to go back to a good support of the real economy, and we don't need to be a war zone. The 1,000-point drop scared a lot of people. The possible connection to the negotiations on the reform package were terrifying. Is this a market or a war zone? Who wants to be involved? So there's some real fear of the stock market. My strategy currently is what I call the big chicken. And, I'd rather see the Kevin Costner kind of equity than the games going on, unfortunately, in the stock market, which is too bad because we need liquid markets. In the long term, the stock market, the equity markets is going to be where the opportunity is. That's where we're going to get the benefit of new technology and the shift to the BRIC nations. But right now is early. It's a very insecure situation. Bond markets. I put a survey up on the blog earlier this week. The sort of drop in the fears in sovereign bond really does have fixed income investors concerned. First, the mortgage markets cycled down in a way they didn't think possible. Now the sovereign bond markets are cycling down in ways they didn't think possible. So there's a real flight to quality. Ultimately, the best quality is where you've got natural resources or equity growth underneath. But now is the time to stick with very high quality. Again, stick with the fundamentals. Where is the issuer that you're dealing with, doing something that has real fundamental economic value and not doing harm? And BP is a great example of what happens when you're in an activity where something has a negative impact on its ecosystem. So try and stick with things that it's just better not to be in Enron. It's better not to be in BP. So you really do care if your entities have what I call a negative return to the network. And that's why, frankly, I prefer Norway to the U.S. and Apple to AT&T. I want to be in something that really is fundamentally sound. And, again, stick with the shorter durations because we're in a deflationary environment right now, but inflation could pop up. The currency markets, the dollar continues to shine, precious metals too. It's a mistake to think that body blows to America like the Gulf oil spill will kill the dollar. The dollar financial mechanism is a football. What happens is the team that controls the football changes. My prediction, again, slow burn, the dollar is going to continue to be the safe haven this year. There's big global institutions moving into gold and silver, central banks, and institutional manners. Every effort's being made globally, not just here but globally, to push the retail investor into ETFs. Again, they're almost the new fiat currency. Big piece we did in this quarter called GLD and SLV, Disclosure in the Precious Metals Puzzle Palace. I really recommend it to you. The more I know about ETFs, the more I want to avoid them. Some heroes and opportunities for the quarter. I've mentioned Kevin Costner. On an earlier Solari report, I talked about Iceland. Great examples of the general opportunity, which is to focus on what are the areas in the economy that really add value, what are the real problems, what are the real solutions. Great effort, great response by Iceland to all the terrible things that have happened to them in terms of being sort of fraudulently induced and pumped and dumped, a real effort to create a place where global transparency can find a home. I hope they're successful. Great new political party started by the artists. So I would say the opportunity for the next 6 months, if you can do it, is stop paying attention to the gorilla that's making all the noise and running around and breaking everything. Focus on how you can be a part of and contribute to real solutions that you enjoy investing in and working on, where you think you can make your way. Because there's no doubt about it, as change accelerates, our boats are being burned. Many of the things we thought we could count on, we won't be able to count on, but they're new opportunities. I'm a little bit reminded of there's a great series that we did earlier on the Solari Report, Intelligence. It was a Canadian TV show that I've recommended to you, really a super description of how intelligence and enforcement and the drug business sort of combine and work together, and within the sort of geopolitics of those businesses. And there's one point at which the CIA, USA guys, FBI are moving in on the marijuana dealers in British Columbia, and one of the brothers of the largest marijuana dealer in Vancouver turns to his brother and he says, "Embrace the change, shapeshift." So that's what we have to do. We have to move forward, because the path behind us is literally dissolving away. So let's go to the movies very quickly. Spartacus, very long 3-hour movie. It's up on Hulu if you want to watch it online. The reason I wanted you to watch it is it's a real wonderful description of a very important point to understand in this kind of environment. We're watching increased deterioration in our society. We're watching just incredible growth of corruption. We're watching many people that we thought would never behave in the ways that they're behaving, doing and saying things that are very, well, we have a lot of people just making money by doing things that harm other people. And so it's an environment where it's very easy to take on a higher rate of entropy. And the amazing thing about the Spartacus story is we literally have a gladiator, a slave, played by Kirk Douglas, who decides that even though he's in a society that's behaving in very primitive ways, and he's encouraged to behave in very primitive ways, he decides he's not going to. And in fact, that's a personal decision. We don't control what anybody else does, but we do have control about whether we do it. And it is absolutely possible to literally wake up and say, you know, today I'm not going to make money. I'm not going to do anything that harms other people. I'm going to act towards others as I would wish them to act towards me, whether they're acting that way or not. And it's that kind of personal responsibility, it's the opportunity to take that personal responsibility that we're going to need. And that is what change will flow from, is that decision of, I wish to be excellent no matter what is happening around me. And so it's that decision to be excellent. And I think Spartacus tells the story. It's interesting, I watched it again this week with my colleague David Lichty, who's a younger generation. He just rolled his eyes. He thought it was very old hat. So for the youngsters, I apologize if the 60s style seemed long-winded. It is, but it's one of my favorite. So I recommend it to you, Spartacus. In closing, next week we have the Precious Metals Market Report. James Turk is going to be joining us. I wanted James to join Franklin and me to talk about global demand, who's buying, central banks, institutions, what's happening. A little bit more about how retail is being tricked into the ETFs and what that is all about. I'll be joining you. Oddly enough, James will be over here in the United States, and I'll be calling in from London, where I'm going to be for a private conference that I'm attending. I'm also hoping to go over to Jersey to get a chance to spend some time with James' team at Gold Money. We'll be publishing a special report next week on the blog on depositories, options to hold your precious metals if you don't want to hold it at home, opportunities to hold it in depositories, an alternative to the to the ETFs. July 15th, Bob Sullivan on identity theft, protecting ourselves from a very expensive and painful crime. Then on July 22nd, Nick Beglich on HARP. It's a critical issue for understanding who is in control and how they make the slow burn economy go. It's dovetailing with our interviews with Clifford Carnicom because there's lots of reason to believe that the global spraying and HARP are connected. Again, a couple of announcements. Complete collection of audio seminars are available at your cart. Carnicom transcript is available. We're doing a fundraiser during July. $75 of every new annual subscription goes to Clifford Carnicom. So if you're a monthly and you want to switch or you have friends or family and you want to encourage them, I think that's a great thing. The donation will be in our name, not yours. So if you're concerned about the politics of donating, don't worry. The politics are ours. A new podcast, number 13, it's a good one. I recommend it to you, and you can reach that at the podcast page or up on the blog. So until next week when I talk with you from London, remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in one, you certainly need to start one. Good night and good luck.